Welcome to the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley, psychology student and international best-selling psychology author of over 30 psychology books, bringing you the latest psychology news, fascinating psychology topics and more each week. If you want to learn more, then please check out connorwhiteley.net/books. And don't forget to like and subscribe to the YouTube video or follow on your favourite podcast app. And here's the show. Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 263 of the Psychology World podcast with me, Con Whiteley. And today's episode is on what are the pros and cons of friends with benefits. And it is Saturday, the 27th of April 2024, as I recorded. So today I just wanted something really fun, really light, really upbeat. And to be honest, I'm trying to prepare myself for a future podcast episode I want to do based on something that happened to me. But I do need to work myself up towards it. And even though I have no friends with benefits, I would never do it. This is not something that would be right for me. And I do talk about it in today's episode because I do feel that, especially in young people culture though, that there is a lot of pressure to just have sex for the fun of it, just have casual sex. And I want to sort of caveat this, even though it is perfectly okay. I know there are some people that think that casual sex is like a massive sin and it's horrendous. I don't believe that whatsoever. If people want to have sex casually, that's perfectly okay. And hell, like, I would advocate for it because it's fun for my hair. And I think like that, though, so even though this is not right for me, this is still a really fun topic. I did have a lot of fun doing the research and writing up this podcast episode. So I had fun. You're going to have a lot of fun. And this is just something that's so light-hearted, which is brilliant considering how much time we spend on this podcast looking at mental health, psychotherapies, and just clinical psychology in general, especially me, because all I've been is just because I've been living and breathing clinical psychology for a little while because of one of the new psychology books that I'm working on. So this is just such a nice break, and this was a lot of fun. You're going to enjoy this one for sure. So you got that to look forward to in the content part of today's episode. So moving on to the psychology news section, we're reading from the British Psychological Society Research Digest. And the first one is, did the pandemic change our personalities? Although we often think our personalities as fairly fixed, we've recovered a lot of research which suggests that personality traits can in fact change. They can shift as we age, for example, and some evidence suggests even that they might change certain traits at will, though this does require some hard work. Significant life events can also move the needle, which in turn can have a long-lasting impact on our thoughts, feelings and behaviours, with the huge emotional, physical and political upheavals in recent years. The COVID-19 pandemic is therefore a prime period for researchers to understand such changes. Writing in the Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin, a team from the University of Toronto and Washington sought to map shifts in personality traits across the course of the first 2 years of the pandemic, and they explore some potential links to health and well-being. And I'm only going to read one paragraph from the actual write-up itself. As the pandemic progressed onwards, data obtained between April 2021 and December 2021 began to show changes in traits that have previously been linked to health behaviours, increases in conscientiousness, extroversion and agreeableness were associated with increased levels of well-being as well as physical and mental health symptoms. Decreases in neuroticism were associated with the same results. So there's actually not a great amount that I can actually talk about when it comes to this psychology article, because I've also covered it like quite a lot Not necessarily on the podcast, but in my book, Personality, Psychology and Individual Differences. Plus, I've just remembered that I have actually touched upon it on different podcast episodes before, though. And I always like to highlight that it's a massive myth that personality stays the same, because you can change it yourself, even though that is very, very hard. However, but certain events and your age can change it quite a lot, though. And it's also quite interesting that the COVID-19 pandemic could actually cause like a massive change, because that was a major event. So the COVID-19 pandemic and these sort of personality studies are going to be really useful tools like moving forward to help support the academic argument that major events can cause personality changes. So that's something interesting to think about. And the second one is credibility and the climate crisis. Increasingly, scientists and the public alike have expressed support for academics engaging in political advocacy, particularly when it comes to the climate crisis. But whilst breaching scientific neutrality to protest might feel like a moral imperative for some climate scientists, there are often risks to be considered. Amongst these risks, many worry it could undercut their scientific credibility. In a new study published in the Journal of Environmental Communication, Ronald Freeman of the University of Albany finds that this particular risk is low, at least when it comes to students. In fact, not only do the findings of the study suggest that disruptive action does not dent scientific credibility, but in some cases, it can actually increase the impact of the message. And I certainly agree with this, though, because I mean, like, it's all well and good politicians, lay people and other people that aren't experts in their field campaigning, talking about it. And if those people have like good intentions, then they are amazing. They are absolutely critical and they are needed more than ever though, to like campaign on like social issues, the climate crisis, and so many other absolutely critical issues like of our time. Those people are amazing. And if you're engaged in like social activism, then more power to you. I wish you the best of luck. However, scientists and other egg experts in their field do provide a really important and valuable service, though, because these experts in their field, so are they going to bring the like credibility and the expertise to social activism. So it's really important that their voices are heard and that they also engage in it, though, because they carry the weight of the academic research like behind it, though. And a good 99% of them, like every single person in like engaged in like activism, they're trying to do like a good work that helps people and benefits everyone in like society. Of course, there will always be those that campaign for things that do not help anyone, though. And I will not mention what those particular areas are, because this is not a political podcast. But as long as people are doing good, as long as people are trying to help others and help make the world like a better place, so and not go backwards, then that's absolutely brilliant. And more scientists should be engaging in political activism. But scientific neutrality, I think, is an idea. It's important, but as this research shows, it's actually quite a low risk. So it's just something to think about. Especially if there's something that you're passionate about and you're really interested in. So the last one is being political through the years. In honour of the latest issue of The Psychologist, which focuses on the theme of being political in divisive times, we dipped into our archives for a snapshot of some political research we've covered over the years. And I just want to say, for once, I've not actually received this issue just yet, so I can't criticise myself for that. I've not read them yet. In 2021, Emily Reynolds reported that we prefer political allies who try to understand their opponent's views. There appears to be a limit, however, with this study finding that validating those opposing their beliefs is too far for many. And yeah, I sort of agree with that one. And whilst you might think of politics as its own self-contained area of investigation, no, I would never think that. It undeniably seeps into many aspects of psychological research, as reflected in this piece from 2019. In it, Jess Signal argues political biases may make some psychological research less robust. All the way back to 2019, we reported that political activism is a good view. In their study, Keller and Kalesa found that activism appears to lead people to feel happier. Therefore, we can't guarantee the same positive effects in our current political landscape. It's worth remembering that making your voice heard on issues you care about is also important. So even though this covers quite a lot of different articles, I do just want to say that in my clinical psychology reflective books, especially Volume 3, and I think Volume 4, which just recently comes out, also like covers this sort of area, is that even though politics, we like to pretend, is a very self-contained area, it affects all of our lives. It definitely affects our mental health, whether this is from the funding and how mental health services are set up directly, or whether the way to how we actually feel about our mental health. That would be because I know I did some reflection because of the UK's, it was something bill like Stop the Protest Bill, or there was some sort of really quite egregious anti-protesting law that came in a few years ago here in like the UK that sort of made it half illegal, to be honest. And then like something that I was actually reflecting on, like, but like about the law in the clinical psychology reflective books about how that be a restriction about how to like make your voice heard, actually making like younger people feel like quite hopeless, and it's decreasing their mental health. So whatever area of psychology you actually want to work in, politics is gonna impact it. So I think to say that politics doesn't impact your work will always be relatively silly. Of course, as psychologists, whether you're a clinical psychologist, business psychologist, educational psychologist, etc., you will always try to remain neutral because of the job comes at first. Politics will always come 10th, 11th, 20th, because you've got so many other priorities. But it will impact you, especially if you actually work in something like educational psychology. Because if you're an educational psychologist, then everything that you work in, every case that you're going to come across, has a political implications. Because the government just has to pass one simple policy, and your school will be impacted. So it's just something to think about, and I think that, yeah, definitely try and understand your opponent's views. Sometimes it's actually quite fun, and it's actually really interesting. So, I don't know, it's just something to think about. So I really hope that you enjoyed the psychology news section. So let's move on to the personal update. So we're moving on to the personal update. So for this week, I actually do have stuff to report there because there was some really good stuff. And this has actually been a really nice week though. Like, I'm still getting back on my feet, but it's been really nice to actually, and I thought I'd never ever say this, it's actually been rather nice. It's nice though, getting back to revision and actually going back to statistics, which is something I thought I would never ever say. But it's nice to but it's a very nice symbol that life's getting back to normal though. And I mean, like, it's actually like not bad though. And plus there's a like psychology book that I'm sort of basing on it, which is also really good like motivation. Plus I'm actually really looking forward to that like coming out though. So there's lots of stuff like happening in like that department. I'm also doing quite a lot of other like psychology research and like some other stuff. Also, I've actually got back to my data analysis for my, for actually one of my studies. So that's going well. I've had to do some tweaking and I'm definitely not as far in the analysis as I want to be. But if my supervisor queries that and if she asks what's happened, then I'm sort of going to have to tell her what happened to her, which will be uncomfortable, but I've sort of just got to it like at that point though. But I've also been doing like lots of other stuff, including an absolutely brilliant work opportunity that came up at my university for a student ambassador. So I know that this will definitely delight the podcast, and I definitely know that this will make some people stop listening. But at my university, there's this brilliant work opportunity for asylum seekers. So these asylum seekers came to the university because these are people were either at university or they had shown a promise to actually go to university back in their home like, countries, but their educational journey was like stopped and abruptly as they like had to flee though. So when my university was like talking about it, and then they were like helping like these asylum seekers to perhaps like come to full-time education and like continue it in like the UK. And then as a student ambassador, we just did a like campus tour. Well, officially we were meant to do a like campus tour, but in the end we were just talking like to them though, because there was a few more than like we anticipated. But someone else actually like led the like tour though, and I mean like they were the nicest people ever, which I always knew they were going to be, but I mean like if you're in the UK, you know what the media, the government and tons of other portrayals of like what asylum seekers are traditionally though, so to actually talk to them, interact with them, well, with them that was absolutely lovely. And I have never been thanked so much in my life. They were really grateful that we'd given up our time, that we were showing them around, that we were talking to them. And I mean, I had some brilliant conversations with some of them though, because they all wanted to do such amazing stuff though. One person wanted to work in politics and international relations. Another one wanted to do psychology to help people. I always knew that was going to be the case, but to have it confirmed was really nice though. And I really cannot recommend it enough though. In the future, I could see myself working with asylum seekers. They're such a nice group of people. So I think it's just like something to think about and just something that's really nice though. And it really does challenge some of your preconceived notions about certain groups of people. I know that I had beliefs that was certainly challenged, but in the best possible way. So I just wanted to share that with you. And as always, I always love to hear your thoughts and feelings on today's episode. So you can always email me at connorwiley@connorwiley.net. You can always leave a comment at the show notes at connorwiley.net/podcast, or you can always tweet me on Twitter at @SciFiWiley. I always love to hear from all you, but it really helps make the podcast feel more like a conversation. Or you can also leave a comment on the Facebook post at Connor Wiley Psychology Author, or contact me via LinkedIn, even though I will admit I don't go on LinkedIn that often, I go on it once a week, but definitely try contacting me there, if that's your preferred method. And today's episode has rather unsurprisingly been sponsored by Psychology of Relationships, the Social Psychology of Friendships, Romantic Relationships and more. So this is an absolutely brilliant sponsor for today's episode, because we're going to be talking about friendships and romantic relationships, because friendship with benefits definitely blurs the lines. So to be honest, this is such a nice complimentary book for today's episode though, because it talks about the biological, psychological and the social reasons for why relationships form, both in terms of romantic about relationships and friendships themselves. It also talks about communication, which still, when it comes to friends with benefits, is absolutely critical. And then it also talks about how do relationships that change and end, which, to be honest, is yet again another really good caveat and a really good piece of information for today's episode. And then it also talks about bystanderism, pro-social behaviour, altruism, theories of sexuality, and so much more. To say this is a book that I love is a massive understatement, especially when it complements today's episode so well. So if you're interested in learning about romantic relationships and friendships, then definitely check it out. I really do recommend it. So that is Psychology of Relationships, The Social Psychology of Friendships, Romantic Relationships, and more. Available at all major ebook retailers, and you can order the paperback and the hardback version from Amazon, your local bookstore or local library if you request it. And you can also get the audiobook version narrated by artificial intelligence from selected audiobook retailers like Kobo, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, Spotify, and selected library systems like Biblioteca, Baker & Taylor, and Overdrive. So whilst buying books helps to support the creation and the editing of the podcast, my time is sponsored by my wonderful patrons. And if you wanted to become a patron and get tons of great rewards, now you can at patreon.com/thepsychologyworldpodcast. So that's enough for the person update. Let's move on to the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the content part of today's episode. So we're going to be talking about what are the pros and cons of friends with benefits. As you can tell by my voice, I'm very excited about this episode because, again, this is something I would never do. Would never ever do it. But I think this is such a fascinating idea that I think in another life I would like to do this, but I know this is not going to happen, and this is just really fun, so let's dive into it. Introduction to Friends with Benefits. Something I find really interesting is that despite levels of sexual intimacy being at a 30-year low, casual sex is rather common, and over 50% of the younger people between 18 and 29 years old have reported at least one casual sex experience. Lambert et al. 2003, Hawkins et al. 2023. I think that's rather interesting because it shows that whilst overall sexual activity is decreasing, people still want casual sex no matter what. Furthermore, casual sex encounters are not all good and they're not all bad, so they certainly aren't created equal, since some examples of casual sexual encounters can include hookups or friends with benefits, and everything in between. It's the experience of friends with benefits that will be the focus of today's episode. And in case you don't know what friends with benefits are, Lewis et al. 2012 defines friends with benefits as regular sex between people that tend to know each other well as they have an emotional connection. The first con or disadvantage of friends with benefits is that people who tend to fall in love easily need to be very cautious. Yet some other disadvantages are that friends with benefits don't tend to be suitable for people who want a committed relationship or have a challenging attachment history, since this sort of a relationship really will not work for these people. And I just want to jump in here, and I know I mentioned this earlier in the introduction, but I do want to hammer this home and say that it doesn't make you a bad person or a strange or odd one if friends with benefits isn't right for you. I know in certain subcultures, friends with benefits is something that is relatively normal. And to be honest, actually in wider society, there are tons of people that have friends with benefits. I know plenty of like straight people who love and only have friends with benefits, and the same goes for gay people. So that's a little myth that I wanted to bust straight away. It doesn't matter what your sexuality is, your background, or what your friends are doing, friends with benefits are relatively common. But if it isn't right for you, then that's okay. The worst thing that you can do is nest in a friends with benefits relationship, realize you don't like it, and get seriously emotionally hurt by the experience. In addition, friends with a benefit is a mixture of real emotional connection between the partners, good sex, and sexual attraction. Since in that respect, friends with a benefit and romantic relationships aren't actually that different. Instead, the only aspect that truly separates these types of relationships is that the idea of a romantic relationship involves a future for the couple, and the perceived demands of a budding committed relationship. What are the cons of friends with benefits? On the whole, there are some additional clear cons and disadvantages of friends with a benefit, because if someone develops a romantic attachment to their friend, then this could end up in a losing a good friendship. Heartbreak is another one, and for some people, this could be a waste of time that could have been better spent on intentional dating. Personally, this is what I could never really do, friends with benefits, because I want something real, committed, and something that involves a future. I don't want a friendship just to have sex, and I do love the idea of building a future and a relationship with someone. I want someone that can make me laugh, I can do things with, like traveling, and I want to be with them for long term. And to be honest, I actually don't care about sex or physical stuff too much. Granted, I'm probably only saying that because of something that happened to me recently, but I'm not that bothered. I want the committed stuff. Anyway, friends with benefits just isn't for me, and I'm sharing that because I do feel that in wider society, there is a pressure on young people just to have sex, do adult things, and do them regularly. So I want you to know that if you don't want to do that, that's okay. The losing a friend of potential of friends with benefits. So a moment ago, I mentioned that sometimes someone in the casual sex relationship can develop romantic feelings for the other one. And this can be a problem. And whilst there's no good way to stop this from happening, if this does happen, then it can lead to the breakdown in the friendship, even more so if these feelings aren't shared by the other person. Thankfully, research from the University of Louisville suggests that this isn't a death sentence for the friendship, because 80% of the participants who ended their friends with benefits relationship were still friends. In addition, a lot of friends with a benefit don't last very long, with MatchKit and All 2020 finding that 60% of the people in these relationships just went back to being friends after having sex only once. As well as most friends with a benefit relationships never progress into romantic ones and end before that, with 75% of relationships going back to platonic friends or not being friends at all after they stop seeing each other. Which I have to admit is brilliant news, and I think that will relax a lot of the people who want to try friends with benefits, but they are scared that this might happen. And I'll talk a bit more about how to possibly stop avoiding losing friends in a moment. What are the pros of friends with a benefit? Interestingly enough, there has been a lot of research over the years on friends with a benefit and its advantages. Even though it has mainly been focused on emerging adults, it's important to note that friends with benefits does happen in adulthood, including for people who are single parents and divorcees. And I'm not even going to try and say that surname out of fear of a completely butchering in it. But it's a paper from 2021. In addition, the reason why single parents and divorcees engage in their friends with a benefit could be because, if you really think about it, both these older ager groups and emerging adults share some behaviours. Due to all of these groups are sharing different types of major life transitions, so despite their personality and developmental differences, there are some similarities. Our first benefit of friends with a benefit is in emerging adults who have had sex with a friend's egg at least once said it was a positive egg experience, regardless of their gender. Garasto and all, 2012. Also, there is some evidence of gender differences in their perception of casual sex, as men are more likely to perceive it as more positive because they are more likely to experience an orgasm, according to Pyman and all, 2019. A second of advantages to friends with benefits includes it can lead to greater feelings of sexual agency, confidence and satisfaction in a relationship that is typically egg experience as more psychologically safe. Owen and all, 2013, Hawkins and all, 2023. As well as the quality of the sexual egg experience tends to increase with a person's sense of familiarity and safety with the person. Personally, even though I'm flat out not going to go into the details because, as I've mentioned before, I'm warming myself up to do an episode, because I do want to bust some myths and I do want to talk about it because it will be really helpful to some people. I want to stress here that having a sexual encounter with someone who you don't feel comfortable with and safe with, even more so because of what they've done, is an awful egg experience, and I don't wish it on anyone. So I can understand how the quality of sexual egg experience can increase with a person's sense of safety, as well as familiarity. Building upon this further, safe sexual practices are critical, and in contrast to popular belief, they are more consistent in friends with a benefit relationships. Therefore, this reduces the most common risks of a casual sex, like getting a sexually transmitted infection and unplanned pregnancies. Also, one benefit I do like about the idea of friends with a benefit is that the sex is a lot more convenient, since there is basically no effort, unlike in most serious romantic relationships, and friends with a benefit reduces the risk of sex with strangers. What should you consider if you want to explore friends with benefits? So this is the section of the podcast episode that I was really interested in for my own curiosity, because even though I have no intention of ever doing this, I'm still really interested in the concept. As a result, if you're thinking about starting a friends with benefits relationship with, well, a friend, you should consider these things. Firstly, you need to know yourself and be transparent, because less than 25% of friends with a benefit relationships turn into romantic ones. So if you want to start a friends with benefits relationship, hoping that it's going to turn into a romantic one, and you want to fall in love with your friend, and you want them to fall in love with you, then you need to communicate that. Also, if you're dating and want to pursue another person, then you need to let them know this, so your friendship doesn't degrade into a situationship. Now, because I'm somewhat cut off from the dating world and its wonderful lingo, I had no idea what this term actually was, so I needed to look it up. So I'm just going to clarify here that for the uninformed, that a situationship is a romantic or sexual relationship that hasn't been formalized yet. Again, I think that's clear as mud, but I think that the people who are used to dating can clarify that, and they know what that means. Personally, this is another reason why I just couldn't do friends with benefits, because sure, I am still a young person at heart. At least at heart, maybe not like mentally. But I do want sexual and romantic things to happen. So there are friends I would love to have this sort of relationship with. I think there's two friends in my life where I would have loved to have this with. Yet I know that I don't want this with them. I want a real romantic relationship with them. So that's one reason why I just couldn't do this, and I just wouldn't be a good fit for me. Because I would be in a relationship that would never be what I wanted it to be. And that wouldn't be good for me or them over time. Secondly, you need to set clear boundaries from the start of your friends with benefit relationship. Since if you are sexually attracted to your friend and you broach the subject with them, then you need to talk about what you do and what you don't want from the relationship. This is going to save you a lot of stress later on. This will allow you to create shared dominion and an informed consent before getting sexually in love with each other. Finally, nurture your friendship, because the sex should hopefully be very exciting and really, really good. But you need to make sure that you don't forget to do what you enjoyed before you were started being friends with a benefit. Therefore, you might want to spend some time together with a shared friends, do something just the two of you that you both like, and keep each other updated on your lives. In other words, when you become friends with a benefit, don't forget that you're actually friends too, and you're actually friends first. So you need to keep the friendship alive, fun, and kicking. Conclusion. Overall, when it comes to friends with a benefit, having casual sex with a great trusted friend isn't going to work for some people. Then it will for others. Of course, I would add that if you're a new adult, a single parent, or a divorcee, then at these times of your lives have been a very rich opportunity to have sex and explore. However, you do have to do what is best for you, because I don't want you to get hurt physically or emotionally by friends with a benefits relationships. You will need to have consensual sexual relationships with someone who you like and who also likes you back, and someone that will respect you. And having sex with a trusted friend might be a great way to do that, because it might be pleasurable and wonderful. So after this podcast episode, would I ever consider being in a friends with benefits relationship? I would consider it and think about it for sure. But I know myself well enough to know that this in real life, I just couldn't do this, because I can have attachment issues. I'm definitely not into sex, to be honest, that much. And honestly, the people that I would flat out love to be in friends with benefits relationships with are actually people that I want long-term committed relationships with. So no, for me personally, this would not work. However, you might be different. And if you are, the more power to you. And I truly wish you the best of luck. Because I've heard from some friends over the years that they are amazing. And also, come to think of it, some of my older friends, I did actually get his boyfriend from a friends with benefits relationship, and they are the best couple ever. I mean, I will measure all my future relationships off those two, because I mean, like, I got to know them quite well. I got to know the details and stuff, and I mean, they are an amazing couple. Like, I'm really impressed. And their relationship had less than 25% chance of developing. So it's possible. Just do what is right for you and have fun, because that really is the key to life. So I really hope that you enjoyed today's episode and you got something out of it. I know that I did, because I've been wanting to do this episode for a while, but I just haven't got around to it, and this has been a lot of fun. I mean, I've laughed, I've smiled. This has just been a lot of fun for me. And I know, at least in English culture, this is very taboo to talk about, but everyone does it. And I mean, like, I don't think there's any harm in it. If you want to have fun with one of your friends, go for it. Just have fun. Like, live your life and just do whatever makes you happy, because life is way too short. So, I mean, like, so thank you for listening. I've hoped that this has helped you as much as it has, like, for me. And I hope that this has made you smile, because, I mean, like, we probably don't talk about this enough. We probably don't normalize it enough, even though everyone basically does this. So it's interesting. It's very, very interesting for sure. And if you know someone who would enjoy today's episode, then please share it with them. I'm always really grateful when you wonderful listeners help spread the word about the podcast. And if you want to learn more, definitely check out Psychology of Relationships, The Social Psychology of Friendships, Romantic Relationships, and more. Available in all the usual places, and you can get the audiobook narrated by artificial intelligence from selected audiobook retailers. And if you want to become a patron of the show, now you can at patreon.com/ The Psychology World Podcast. Or you could buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/ Con Whiteley. So have a great day, everyone, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. Please remember to like the video and subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow the podcast on your favourite podcast app. And if you wanted to learn more, then please check out the backlist of the podcast episodes or my books at conwhiteley.net. So have a great day, and I'll see you next time.